on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of InvestTalk. It is September 9th, 2015. We're here to talk about your money, how to protect it, how to make it grow over time. We don't look for any magic formulas, because there isn't any, or magic techniques or secrets. There isn't any. There's just time-tested principles. Time-tested principles. We like to practice the methods of the most successful of all time. Why not ride on their shoulders if they are very successful? Why not? If you're new to investing, we're here to answer the most basic questions. Don't be shy. If you're an experienced investor, share your experience with us. That's, you know, I don't have all the answers. I don't pretend to. So we want to hear about the mix of your portfolio or how you're investing, maybe some of your war stories of some disasters. This all helps everybody. We've all made mistakes, so we want to learn from them. So we're all sharing the day-to-day volatility of this summer stock market. You saw what happened today. You saw what happened yesterday. You've seen the last 2 weeks what's happened. And just so you know, the high of this market for this year was May 21st. Ever since that May 21st high, and believe me, I'm not talking about a very high mark. It wasn't. But the market has fallen from there. You can look at a chart. From May 21st on, it did retest that high, got really close to it, but didn't close above that high, and then continued on down. But it really didn't start to collapse about 2 weeks ago. Okay, so that's what's happening. Now, we're churning sideways. We've been going sideways. And is that bullish or bearish? I'm not convinced it's bullish yet. I think it's more on the bearish side. I think... we'll probably retest the lows we had a couple weeks ago. Wouldn't be surprising. We could even break below them, but you know, it should not surprise anybody to retest them. That's normal in a correction. So, we all want to share everything we can. Recently, we had that correction. It was a 13% correction, by the way. 13%. Then, you know, this was in my market commentary this morning. I talked about it. And mentioned the May 21st day, and mentioned it was 13%. And then the five-day period from August 18th is where it really took a dive. And now we've made a bounce from that intraday low on August 24th. We bounced. But are we going to have a V-bottom? Do you remember the last V-bottom? That was October. Take a look at the chart. Last October, the S&P went straight down, came straight back up. We're not doing that this time. It's already different. Not doing it. Can't say it's a V-bottom. So that was in the market commentary this morning, talking about those kinds of things and talking about the probable outcome and the possible outcomes of what's going to happen. And, of course, one possibility is maybe this is the beginning of a new bear market. Maybe. I don't think so, but it could be. Most bear markets start with, you know, fears of a recession. And I just don't see the fear of recession yet. I don't see it. I mean, it's, you know, but... you know, it's always possible, but I don't think so. Now, it's time to let you in on the conversation instead of what I want to talk about. We can start right now. You can get through to me at 888-99-CHART, and we can talk anytime. You can ask a question anytime you want. So let's take this question that came before today's program.
Hi, guys. This is Quentin from Massachusetts. The question I have is, you were just talking about if a company goes bankrupt and you're in their 401k, that 401k is actually held by another, you know, company, insurance company, or broker, or whatever, and then so that does their bankruptcy, the company you work for, it doesn't affect your 401k. But the question I have is, what if the broker goes bankrupt? I know if you have money in the bank and the bank, you know, goes under, that the FDIC will cover you. I think it's up to $250,000. It used to be $100,000. I don't know if that $250,000 was a temporary increase or if it's permanent now. I think a similar thing, if you're in a credit union, it's not the FDIC, it's some kind of credit union insurance, And I was wondering what the value of the protection in there was. But more importantly, in your 401k, is there any protection? I believe there's some sort of protection. I think, as I recall, a long time ago, it was like $500,000, but I'm not sure what I'm talking about. Is there any guarantee if the company holding your funds actually goes under in terms of recovering your funds, or, you know, somehow it's all yours? That's the question anyways. Thanks for the show. Fantastic show. Take care.
You know, for someone who didn't know for sure, you hit all, you answered your questions correctly. The FDIC is $250,000. Those are banks. If you have a savings account or checking account, your money is guaranteed against theft or against, you know, anybody trying to take it. In the securities industry, it's SIPC, and it is $500,000 protection against anybody taking your money. But remember, we're talking about a 401k. The 401k is held by a custodian. That custodian, if that custodian goes bankrupt, okay, the SIPC insurance would apply, okay? Or if someone tries to steal your money from that custodian. Remember, the employer is not the custodian. Yesterday we talked about, well, what if the employer went bankrupt? What would happen to my 401k? And we said, well, the employer doesn't have the money. He's not the custodian. He has nothing to do with the money. It's held by a custodian. It could be an insurance company. It could be a bank. It could be a securities company. You know, so you really want to know who that person or that company is. That's kind of important. You want to know who is this person. Are they insured? And almost everybody's money is insured with SIPC. Doesn't necessarily mean everybody is, because it depends. Is the custodian SIPC insured? Most of them are, by the way. You know, because you have ERISA rules, retirement rules that apply, and there's protections for you. And remember, you own the assets. When you have a 401k and you own a mutual fund, you own that. It's yours. You know, so it's not the custodian trying to steal your money. Your money is in shares of something, stocks or mutual funds or whatever. So it's not that simple. Let's talk to Brandon Vacaville. How you doing, Brandon?
Hey, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Oh, thank you. Love you guys. Good show. Learned a lot. So, since we're talking about 401ks on the air, today I'm finally eligible for my 401k at my job, and I just printed out, you know, the list of what looks like, to me, only Fidelity mutual funds. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'm liking what I'm looking at. Like the annual average operating expense is floating around like 1.3, and they're 1.3%. Mm-hmm. There don't seem to be too many focused more on the growth aspect of it. So, uh-huh. I wanted to get your opinion on maybe what to look for. I know I'm young, only 24. Not sure how long I'll be with the at my current job. So I'd like to squeeze as much growth out of this as possible.
Okay. Being young, you want to focus on growth funds. If they don't have a lot of growth funds, then maybe they have an index fund there. But if you're young, you know, history has shown over and over and over for years and years and years, small cap grows faster than big cap. So, but also small cap is more volatile. In other words, they go up and they go down faster and steeper. But overall, they go up faster. So if you really wanted to get as much growth as you can get and you don't mind the volatility, that's really important, Brandon. It doesn't bother you, that volatility. Then you would go for the small cap companies, small and mid cap companies, not the large cap. Large cap are more stable and safety and dividend oriented, that kind of thing. Okay.
Okay.
So the small cap. So do you have any small cap Fidelity funds available there?
There's a couple of the small caps.
If you want to, Brandon, you can send me an email and attach the list, and I will tell you. And you tell me that you want growth out of that portfolio, I will help you pick them. I'll tell you which ones I think you should do, and the percentages.
Okay. No, yeah, I'd love to. I just print them out so I can put them in the scan. And
So then send them to me at stevepeasley@investtalk.com. Comes right to my desk. stevepeasley@investtalk.com. Two T's. Okay? I'll answer you.
All right. Perfect. Okay.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Brandon.
It. And I'll speak to you soon. You have a good day, sir.
Yeah. I will respond to you tomorrow. I'm caught up, and I make a real strong effort to stay caught up with my emails. I'm registered investment advisor and financial advisor Steve Peasley. Questions you should ask about a stock: is the company making money? How are they doing compared to their competitors? Important issues. Let's talk about it. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART. Are you worried about interest rates hurting your bonds where if they go up? Remember the Fed's meeting, next week? Are they going to raise interest rates? I don't think so. But, you know, there's some stats out that may suggest that they are. That's one of our talking points today, by the way, about interest rates hurting your bond performance. But also I want to talk job openings. And that's kind of related to this bond issue and what the Fed might do. Job openings. Let's talk about that. And did you read this morning where China is ready to increase dramatically their spending on their inside their economy, making some changes? The Ministry of Finance made some statements what they're going to do. Let's talk about what he said and what will be the overall effect. And can your 401k, since we've been talking about 401ks the last couple of days, can it be seized? We've talked about, well, what happens if it goes bankrupt? What happens if the company you work for goes bankrupt? Is my 401k still safe? Yes, the answer is yes. What happens if the custodian of the 401k, the sponsor of the plan, who has the money, what happens if they go bankrupt? Is my 401k? Most times, yes, it's pretty safe. But what happens, can it be seized or garnished, your 401k? Do you know the answer to that? We're going to talk about that. I have the answer to that. So those are the things we're going to discuss. And, Kalesh, you have something else on your mind you want to talk about, and I'll be happy to talk about that. 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. And, of course, you saw the market today. The Dow was down 239 points. The NASDAQ down 55, and the S&P 500 down 27. So, did it give back all that it gained yesterday? Not quite. About two-thirds or so. And, you know, what is happening? If you look at a chart, it was really interesting. We had those big down days, right? And then the market recovered about half of those down days. And then it fell down a little bit, about to two-thirds, and then back up to close to back to where the half is, and it's chattering right in there. So what we see here is this develop a triangle pattern, we call it. And this triangle pattern is not bullish. It's more bearish at this point. So will that when you're looking at charts and technically speaking, when a triangle is being formed, that means it comes to an apex. A triangle comes to a point, and it will either break down or break up from that point. And you kind of lean on which direction is it going to break to, depending on how the triangle leans. And I would think that most people who are looking at it would say it's leaning to the downside at this point. And that would fit right into retesting the lows, and, you know, just a normal kind of correction. And if it holds the lows, by the way, are very close to the October lows we had last year. If it holds that lows and bounces, that might be a bullish sign, but not yet. You can see the latest dates for retirement reviews on investtalk.com. I'll be meeting with folks on September 23rd at our Dana Point office in Orange County. Then it's San Ramon on September 30th. If you'd like to schedule a retirement portfolio review with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting. The listener line is now open, 888-99-CHART. John in San Jose is next, and then Don in Mountain View.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. While target date funds are vehicles of convenience, they invest in several mutual funds in one package. They may be loaded with inappropriate amounts of risk. How to defuse a 401k bomb? That's one of our talking points for Thursday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
And let's go ahead and talk to John in San Jose. How you doing, John?
I'm excellent. Long time listener. Love the show. Very informative on many subjects.
Thank you.
My first question, with the swing, like today was about 600 points. It opened 300 points up and closed about 300 down. I got nervous, so I pulled about, 60% of my money just sitting on the side in cash. Mm-hmm. And the rest I have in PSQ, which is the inverse.
Right.
I'm about there being a 800-point drop at an opening one day. So should people have their brackets, their stops tighter in general or not?
Well, if it does that and one, it does that, the stops are just going to be blown right through. You know, if it drops 800 points, and depending on what kind of stop they put in, you know, they may not be able to get out fast enough. You know, it's, you know, do they put a limit stop, meaning they want an exact price, or a market stop, that means whatever the market is drops below their number. Whenever it drops below, they get the next trade. That could be, you know, way below what they thought it would be. So, not sure if that's a good idea, unless you know, I think your idea, if you're really worried about the market, is better with the PSQ. And PSQ, everybody, is exchange traded fund seeking the performance corresponding to the inverse return of the NASDAQ 100. In other words, it's shorting the NASDAQ 100. It will go up if the NASDAQ 100 goes down. And John, we happen to own PSQ in our stock managed accounts as well. And a couple, three other short index shorts. So I kind of like that. We also have longs and cash. So we're kind of sitting on the fence, you know, every which way.
Do you see a possibility of it opening 800 points down?
Sure. You can have an event. What you're describing is an event that happened in 1987, October 20th, 1987. The market opened 20% down. Market can open way down. It doesn't have to stair-step down in a logical way, even though we do have some curbs in there. But, yeah, that could happen. I don't know if it's going to happen. Something dramatic has to occur to drive it down. I don't believe that's what we're going to have. We could move into a bear market. And, John, that's what you're describing, a new bear market, because that would be, you know, a shot over the bow of, okay, bear market, we're probably heading into recession. That's what you would be telling me if the market did that.
Right. I know today was a shocker for a lot of people when Apple announced a bunch of new products and their stock dropped.
That's normal for Apple, though. They do.
Pull them up and hold them up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, Apple, when they do this in their mid-year, because this is the year that they upgrade the software, they really don't upgrade the hardware. They do that every other year. And whenever they come out with it, there does seem to be very little that's kind of ho-hum. Everybody expects it. It's like it's the buy the rumor, sell the news phenomena. So everybody knew what was coming out or thought they knew. And then when it actually came out, who cares? Even though I think Apple's really cheap right now. John, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's go to Don in Mountain View. How are you doing, Don?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Is now a good time to sell short Alibaba, or is it too late, and what price should be recovered at?
Alibaba, everybody, they're the one that came out IPO not that long ago, in September last year, 1 year ago. A Hong Kong-based provider of online, mobile, retail marketing. Okay, they're like, you know, what's the Amazon of China? I don't know if I would want to short Alibaba, even though, you know, they're now selling way below their IPO price. I mean, I would tend to want to buy it, if you want to know the truth, not short it. They're going to make $2.66 next year. They're going to make $2.35 this year. And the year after, they're going to make $3.39, 2017. And their sales are growing between 25 and 45% per quarter. It's hard for me, and they're finally getting to a place where they're not too expensive. You know, the stock has come down to a point where you say, hey, that's not too expensive now. It's a 25 PE. If it's a $64, they're going to make a stock, $64 stock, and they're going to make $3.39 Next year, their next year, that's a 20, you know, a 20 PE, a little 19 something. And for them growing as fast as they are, I kind of think, I would not short it. I would not at this point.
Oh, okay.
I think it's too late for that.
Okay. Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks for the call, Don. Yeah, the fundamentals are too strong for them. It's too strong for me to short it. If the fundamentals were deteriorating, maybe. Now, the thought is China is slowing down. China, you know, is having troubles and all those things. Yeah, but everybody see already knows that. When everybody already knows it, they know that the Chinese stock market's crashed. They know that there's economic numbers are getting worse. Everybody knows that, so it's built in. How much is built in? Of course, we don't know how bad it is, but it's built in. What we do know is built into the price. So probably too late to short. This is InvestTalk. We're glad you're here for today. I appreciate it. Any money questions you have should be part of our discussion. So give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
That's our number. We'd love to talk to you. Give me a call. We'll talk about anything that's on your mind. Now, how about if you're worried about interest rates hurting your bonds, there are some alternatives you could think about. Cash being one of them, by the way, even though I know cash doesn't pay hardly anything. But as interest rates start to rise, you'll get a little bit more money on your cash. But the one thing that cash doesn't do is it doesn't go down in value other than if inflation increases. The buying power of cash goes down. You could do REITs, real estate investment trusts. You know, these are stocks that have to pay 90% of their earnings out in the form of a dividend. And if they do, they don't have to pay corporate income tax, but you have to pay the tax on the dividend, of course. There are other things. Something that's more increasing in popularity is called a lending club. Have you ever heard of that? Where you build a portfolio of loans based on your own risk tolerance. And I'm a little nervous about talking about this. It's something that's kind of new, and I don't know enough about it. It hasn't been around long enough to figure that out. You can do annuities. I don't like annuities myself. But that you can do a fixed annuity, like a CD, you get a little bit better interest. A variable annuity, to me, annuities are expensive. But you can do preferred stock. How about preferreds? They act like a bond. It's kind of a combination stock bond. They pay a yield like a bond. So there's different things to do it. You know, of course, you know, you can always buy dividend-paying stocks for income, and I think that's a very good way to do it. I mean, I understand that the market, the market goes up and down, but you could buy companies that are very defensive, telephone companies that pay high dividends. You can buy oil companies that have already been beaten up. I mean, you reduce your risk that way, and if you're just looking for the dividends and you're buying big, huge companies, don't have a lot of risk of the companies going under. You just have some volatility you might have to deal with. But if you're just looking for the dividend yield, you can ignore the volatility. Especially on a big blue chip stock that's been around forever and has a history of increasing dividends. So those are the things you can do. Okay? Our first priority is always answering questions. So let's pick a call that came in earlier on the program. Again, our 24-hour listener line is 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Jim from Indiana. Listen to the podcast pretty much every day. Quick question about 529 plans. My wife and I were discussing 529 plan. I'm in Indiana. I know the 10% rule, if it doesn't get used for college, that the federal tax will take 10%. But in Indiana, they give us actually a 20% tax credit for whatever we put in. So for every $100 I put in, I'm supposed to get a $20 tax credit. So my question is, I'm trying to parse together my understanding of what the disadvantage of doing this would be at all, because even if my son does not go to college, it seems like I'm still ahead by doing this. Also, was wondering about distributions. My wife had said she knew people in college that didn't get their distributions the way that they had expected, and it was all metered out periodically. So I don't know if you can get that distribution all at once to say maybe pay for the whole first year, but there's not enough in the account to pay for all 4 years that you'd get financial aid or whatever. After that, would love to hear your answer. Not sure how that works. Thanks a bunch. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, 529 programs are college education savings plans that has a tax advantage to it. The tax advantage is whatever the growth that you have in that account is not taxed. The money you put in is after-tax dollars. You're paying taxes on the money you put in. You already paid taxes on it. But the growth that you have, well, for as long as you have it in, you don't have to pay taxes. And 529 plans are sponsored by states, not the federal government. Each state can sponsor a 529 program. But every state doesn't have to have them, and not every state has them. Most states do. So the state can also give you benefits, like he was talking about, an extra benefit. But to answer your question, you can... There's a penalty, a 10% penalty if you take out the money, okay, and use it for non-college purposes. But you don't have to do that. Even if your child doesn't go to college, you can always roll that to a different beneficiary, your grandchildren, whenever they are, yourself, your wife, you know, a nephew, niece. You can do that. You don't have to take it. You can take it as much as you want to pay for for the first year of college. You can take all of it and dump it into that first year if you don't have enough for the next year. So you can do that as well. You don't have to, you know, each state, remember, state sponsored. So I'm just giving you the general rules that almost all of them apply. And a 529 has to be to accredited college only. You can't do it for, you know, beauty school or truck driving school, but there's two ways. You know, 529 programs, you can put it and invest in mutual funds, but also many people don't talk about this, but they do have 529 programs where you can directly pay over years directly to the college, if you know which one it is, for tuition. You just pay directly for the tuition. You start paying 5 years, 10 years before your child is old enough to even go to the college, you can pay it early. Now, there's issues with that, obviously. What if your kid doesn't make it into college? SAT scores are bad. Yeah, there's issues, but no one really talks about that particular part of the 529 program. I hope that answered all your questions. If not, send me an email, and any questions I didn't answer, I'll try to answer them. It's time for InvestTalk Personal, personal finance issues that can impact are everybody's pocketbooks, tips for even safer online banking. About half of Americans now use computers or smartphones as their primary banking method. Did you know that? Online banking with PCs or Macs still reigns supreme as most preferred by one-third of customers, but mobile banking on your phone has increased fourfold since 2010. Either method is safer than mailing statements back and forth from the bank. Now, here's how you make mobile and old-school online banking even more secure. These are suggestions compiled by AARP. Three suggestions. First, use your best password practices. That means always use a different password for online banking than for other accounts. Yeah, just what you need, more passwords. This whole password thing is getting that way out of control because you have so many passwords you're supposed to remember, and most people can't remember them. Something has to change. But that, you know, banking, use at least a lot of different characters for your passwords. Make it secure. Another way, now offered, if not required by most banks, often tells a unique image or key code after you sign in, before you enter your password. Some banks now offer a security token code. Oh, man. With ever-changing codes after you register your smartphones. It just gets more complex, doesn't it? Not making it easier, that's for sure. And finally, have a MIA plan. Check with your wireless provider that features that let you remotely erase content or turn off access to your device and bank accounts if your phone is missing in action, lost or stolen. Apple's iPhone has the Find My Phone app built in, but you need to activate it. Apps such as Where's My Droid are available on Android devices. We'll have more ideas for tomorrow. That's InvestTalk Personal, everybody. There's a link to this AARP article on InvestTalk.com under the talking point.
Understand your risk tolerance. How much could you afford to lose, not happily, but without affecting your standard of living? Steve can help you figure that out. Each month, Steve meets with a limited number of our InvestTalk listeners for informal retirement reviews. The next date is at our home office in Dana Point in Orange County on September 23rd. Then it's off to San Ramon on September 30th. You can reserve your time by going to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts.
Hello, Steve and Justin. This is Amir from Urbana, Maryland. I'm a podcast listener. I'm calling about a stock that I own, ticker SAC as in Victor E. I bought the stock a few months back at $64 a share, thinking that oil prices were kind of poised to, with oil prices being low and airlines were poised to make some profit. But with the market downturn, I see that this stock did not do too well. I'm wondering if this is a stock that I should hold on to for like medium term, 2 to 5 years, or should I get rid of it and maybe replace it with something more stable like one of the large oils like ExxonMobil or Chevron. I appreciate your response, and I love your show. Thank you.
Well, this is Spirit Airlines, Inc., SAVE is the symbol, provides point-to-point low-fare airline services to and from North America, the Caribbean, and Latin America. It's out of Florida. And they make good money. They've made money for years, and they've increased their earnings. A 29% increase this year, and then next year another 18%. Sales or growth are going 11 to 12, 13% per quarter. It's a $3.6 billion company, so it's a small-cap company. Good return on equity at 27%, not too much debt. I mean, fundamentally, the numbers look pretty darn good. The stock chart doesn't look so good, but the fundamentals look good. It's worth more than it's trading at $50.58. At that point, at this point, it's a forward-looking PE of 10, and the five-year average is 8 to 26. I would think if it can hold the recent lows it made just a week or so ago, I think I would just hold on to it. The fundamentals look good. I do not like airlines in general. I will say that. We rarely, if ever, buy an airline. Well, there's a number of reasons for that. I don't like the unions involved. I don't like the empty seats that's worthless once the plane takes off. I don't like the fuel costs, which are very difficult to control by the airlines. There's a lot of reasons why I don't care for airlines. But this one looks pretty darn solid, I'll say that. Okay, it looks pretty strong, fundamentally. The chart doesn't look good, but the company looks good. Job openings. July's job openings. Companies' job openings, number of job openings is at a 14-year high, 5.75 million job openings. Problem is they're not being filled. There's a lot of jobs being unfilled. And maybe the skills that they're looking for are not there. It doesn't matter. Regardless of why they're not being filled, this should produce some pressure on current workers' salary. They should go up. Because if the employers can't find the skilled workers they need and jobs are going unfulfilled, then the workers they have should be rewarded more. That's the thinking. Remember, the Federal Reserve is looking for inflation and is not finding it anywhere. The Federal Reserve doesn't really want, that's one of its jobs is to keep inflation low. Well, it is low. So why would they consider raising rates? See, if they would raise rates if inflation came in, but there isn't any. So they're looking for signs of possible inflation down the road. And, you know, this still doesn't tell us there is, because if you look at salaries and increase in salaries, it's still pretty low, pretty anemic. It's just not there. But it was an interesting report that we have so many job openings, 14-year high. Interesting they're not being filled also. Those are kind of fascinating numbers to me. Now, we have to talk about China. China's ready to increase spending. They announced today, the Minister of Finance made a statement today that he's ready to increase spending. He's ready to issue more funds for infrastructure spending, for infrastructure projects, and at the same time implement tax cuts for small businesses. Also, they're going to allow the local governments who are buried in debt, and huge debt that they're carrying, to issue new debt, to roll that old debt into new debt, so there won't be any bankruptcies. Issue debt and swap old for new. Okay, so this is what they can do when you have lots and lots and lots of money, which China does. These are the kinds of things you could do. You can spend money on infrastructure. You can also guarantee debt. What that's going to happen is the federal government's going to back up these state and local government debt burdens. You know, unlike here in the United States, well, the states and cities are on their own. The federal government's not going to bail them out. China is a little bit different. They may bail out. Looks like they're making efforts to do that to me. If you have a question you want answered right now, well, we're here for you. You can give me a call right now. We still have time. You can call before the end of the hour. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you reach me. You can do it right now here on Invest Talk.
Coming up on Invest Talk, answers to your questions. Any money matter? Comparing load and no load mutual funds. How to gauge your needs in retirement. 888-99-CHART. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Did you know you can access a link to a related article with each day's main talking point? Also, you can click back to the last 10 Invest Talks and listen to them at your convenience, each listing the topics and stocks. Just go to investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Vic in San Jose. He wants to talk about the market. How you doing, Vic?
Pretty good. Thanks, Steve, for taking my call.
Thank you.
I was going to ask you about that. You were talking about 800-point drops in the morning when the market opens.
Yes.
Does the circuit breaker rule applies to that, by the way?
It should. The rules are, I don't know what they are, but I don't know exactly how they implement them and how they are. I just know that if the market moves too much in one way or another, that those curbs come in and stops the trade. You know, they only stop it, though, or only for a couple of minutes, and then they reopen them. They don't just completely stop the whole market. That's not how it works.
The way I understood is... usually when the stock drops 10% or more, they use circuit breaker on that. But I wasn't sure about the entire market, though. See, this is for the individual stock. If it drops 10%, then they will use the circuit breaker for that. But I was wondering, for the entire market, would they do that?
They do have circuit breakers. They do have curbs. I don't think it's a straight 10%. I don't remember what it is, but I don't think it's a 10%. But the, you know, at a certain level of fall, they'll what they do is they don't allow any more certain kinds of trades. No more electronic trading, no more, you know, for a certain period of time. Other trades can go through, though, but no more of the high speed.
There's another one called Rule 48, which is in the morning they can halt the market, but I'm still not sure whether they can still halt the market, but yet is that applies to when the stock drops more than, you know, 10-20%? I'm not sure about that.
It
can halt the market, but yeah. That's called Rule 48.
Yeah, they can halt it. But, you know, and it's tracking indexes, you know, like the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. And if they drop a certain amount, there's the curbs come in. And I don't know if they completely stop it. Again, these are I have not read these rules in a long time. So, and I know they've recently changed them.
Yeah, because
so.
I believe 2 weeks ago, I believe they halted the market in the morning when it opens.
Yeah,
it was,
I think,
Rule 48, they called. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if they halted it, but I think they put in curbs, didn't they? And that meant it acted the same thing, by the way. But it meant electronic trading had to stop and certain kinds of trades stopped. You know, so.
I see.
Vic, appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate
Thanks.
It.
And maybe I ought to brush up on those rules, and maybe I can report to you on how what they are. Let's go to Hung Yi in San Jose. How you doing, Hung Yi?
Yes. Hello. Can you check for me stock Barnes & Noble BKS? I have some share, and I want to add some more.
Now, that's Barnes & Noble, everybody. Operates 1,300 Barnes & Noble bookstores. They took a real beating. Today, and you want to buy more? Is that what you said? I don't know if I buy more. You know, Barnes & Noble operates 1,372 Barnes & Noble bookstores in 50 states, and that's a sector, you know, when you look at different sectors of the market, and the book sector, the hard copy book sector is shrinking. And because, of course, we all know everybody downloads books on the iPads or the various pads or Nooks or whatever they call them. And they read through there. Now, I'm an avid reader, and I read through my iPad and books all the time. But, you know, when I go out, I don't really buy new books these days. It's rare. I usually buy them on my iPad because they're cheaper. That's cheaper. So they're going to make 73 cents this year, 85 cents a share next year. Sales are going down and have been quarter after quarter after quarter for four quarters. I wouldn't buy more. I would not. I think it's a dangerous stock to own. Barnes & Noble, BKS, everybody. 401k, can they? We haven't talked about it. I'll talk about it tomorrow, I promise. Before we close for the hour, I just released my market forecast for September. That's available now for Invest Talk Insiders. You can join up for free on investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and on behalf of Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening and hope you'll join us again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.